Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, our weekly radio magazine of the performing arts here on KALW. I'm your host, David LaTulip. This week, Celia Fuchiel, Artistic Director of Smuin Ballet, will share details about the conclusion of Smuin's 22nd season. We'll also visit with two composers, Mason Bates, whose San Francisco Symphony commissioned Auditorium has its world premiere this week, and Scrumbly Coldwin, who talks about the Thrill Peddler's production of The Untamed Stage, Weimar Berlin Cabaret, a new musical. Plus, regular contributor Peter Robinson gears us up for some summer Shakespeare. Stay with us. Music of Scrumbly Coldwin in the style of the Weimar Republic days of cabaret. Scrumbly was a founding member of the Cockettes and composed many songs for Pearls Over Shanghai, Hot Greeks, Tinsel Tarts in a Hot Coma, and other shows. In the 1980s, he performed and composed for The Distractions, and then for 25 years with the Jesters Vocal Trio, touring extensively in Europe. He composed for approximately 36 or so original theatrical productions, including The Jesters' Singing Fools, and has been an accompanist, musical director, and performer in theater and cabaret since the mid-1970s. In addition to his extensive work with Thrill Peddlers, he's also music director at Stagebridge in Oakland and New Conservatory Theater here in San Francisco. Scrumbly Coldwin, such a pleasure to welcome you back to our airwaves.
Glad to be here.
Well, this sounds like such a fun show. I mean, I think this is something that you've been working on for some time. This is a kind of a revision of something back from 1999. Is that correct?
In 1999, I produced a show called The Untamed Stage, or Die Wilde Bühne, which was actual German songs by Spoliansky and Hollander mostly, and one of my own, but only one. And that's what that was. It was after Trudy Hesterberg's Untamed Stage, or Die Wilde Bühne. It sounds better in English to say untamed than wild. The wild stage, I think that sounds a little pretentious.
So this is all your original music now in this show?
Yes, this one is all original music.
Well, I think we're all familiar with the cabaret of Candor and Ebb, and that whole era is introduced to us thanks to that show. What I didn't realize, though, was that the reason that this Weimar Republic was so free and open was that it was a reaction to the previous government, which was Kaiser Wilhelm and being very restrictive, and that this new constitution of the Weimar Republic had a no censorship clause in its constitution, which is remarkable.
It was an amazing time for Berlin because, yes, indeed, all the pent-up artistic energy was able to unleash itself, and all the pent-up sexual energy, different people's ways of expressing themselves were suddenly able to come to the fore because of the change in government. And Berlin has always been a center. Even under the Kaiser, there was that air of rebelliousness and we are who we are.
So this show has been a long time in the making. Tell me who will be appearing in the show.
Who's appearing in it? Well, there's Stephen Satyricon, who's been with us for quite a while. Right now, this particular weekend is their last weekend, is Carly Ozard, who's a now bi-coastal cabaret artist based mostly in New York. Zelda Kosnovsky is our conferencière, sort of the Joel Grey, certainly not at all like Joel Grey. Now, the difference between the main difference between cabaret, besides a different composer, is that we are as shocking, or we aim to be as shocking for today's audiences as the cabaret audiences of Berlin in that day was shocking for their audience.
What was it that first turned you on to this whole period?
I suppose the first whiff I got of it was Brecht, and that would have been in the 60s. And then after that, the comedian harmonists, who I discovered in about 1979. And that was a harmony group, and my vocal trio, the Jesters, we did several of their songs, especially when we toured Germany.
So this is divided into two acts. The first one is sort of like the Weimar Berlin-inspired cabaret setting, right?
Yes. And I actually tried to model these songs on the songs that I was itching to do. It seemed a shame to do a Berlin cabaret and not do these unknown songs by Hollander and Spoliansky, which were so amazing. But I took some of my favorites and I used them as a model. For instance, there's a feminist song. It was maybe 17 years ago, an album came out by Udo Lemper called Berlin Cabaret. And for instance, one, Chuck All the Men Out of the Reichstag. So this very angry feminist song became the model for the one I wrote called How Much Longer.
I wish we had a cut of that. We'll have to get another track and play it some other time on open air. So this show is running through the end of May. The second act, I love how it's being described. Visual delights include young male lovers, nudists, a cow that becomes increasingly self-aware and might change the course of history. You have to explain that.
Exactly.
Exactly. That's not an explanation.
Well, let's see. How can I say it without giving away too much?
It's radio, so you don't have to worry about giving away the visual.
Exactly. Well, I'll do all the visuals then. There's a cow played by Bruna Palmiero. In fact, it was her idea. I said, what strikes you these days? And she says, I've been vegetarian. I would like to play maybe a cow and show things from the cow's point of view. So I decided that the cow would become self-aware, and she wanted the cow to eventually spout enlightened phrases. So, okay, let's start with the cow being self-aware, just aware of how she chews and what it goes through, all those four stomachs and everything. And she says, I chew and poo, that's all I do. Am I just a tube for grass to pass through? And then she starts on her journey of self-awareness. 5 years later, she's accidentally injected with a serum that the brown shorts have prepared. Not the brown shirts, the brown shorts have prepared in order to turn their men into Übermenschen. And she gets injected with it by accident. And something very strange, wonderful, and mysterious and outrageous happens.
Okay. Well, with that mystery, we'll have to leave it there. It's happening at the Hypnodrome. You've been performing there for some time.
Since 2009. Right. The Cockettes revivals, the revivals of the Cockettes shows that where I wrote the music and some of the words, and then I added songs to them in as we did the revisions. Pearls Over Shanghai, Hot Greeks, Vice Palace, Tinsel Tarts in a Hot Coma. And one that was just based on, very loosely based on a Cockettes show called The Jewels of Paris.
And I take it you are going to be behind the piano, as you often are for your shows?
I shall be behind the piano, or in this audience's case, in front of the piano.
Oh, nice. Nice. And I imagine the costumes, or lack thereof, are designed to titillate in the style of a cabaret style.
Yes, reveal
Republic.
A bit of skin.
Yeah,
we're going for androgyny rather than out-and-out drag in that case, both with the women and the men.
Very nice. All right.
As was the custom in Berlin.
Mm, right, right.
You're not trying to pass as anything. You're merely trying to show there's two sides.
Mm-hmm. Scrumbly Coldwin, thanks for coming in today. The Untamed Stage Weimar Berlin Cabaret, a new musical by Scrumbly, is going to be at the Hypnodrome on 10th Street through the end of May. Limited run only, so be sure to check it out. Hypnodrome.org, I believe. Is that correct? Hypnodrome.org for more information. We'll have you in again with some of your wonderful music.
Thank you.
That's music from the amazing Scherzo, third movement of Shostakovich's Ninth Symphony, being performed by the San Francisco Symphony. They did it last night. They'll perform again tomorrow night and Saturday night here in San Francisco at Davies Symphony Hall in the direction of Pedro Heras Casado. Last week, I had the good fortune of talking with Pedro backstage to talk about his 2 weeks of residency here in San Francisco. And this week is Mason Bates' world premiere of his piece Auditorium, on a program that also includes works by Ravel, Bartok, and other composers. I had a great chance to catch the rehearsal yesterday of Mason and then talk with him backstage. Here's that conversation. Mason, thanks so much for taking some time. Right after your final dress rehearsal, a lot going through your mind for this grand world premiere of Auditorium.
It sounded great. We always are perfectionists in this world. Everybody from the musicians to the maestro to the composer is trying to get everything right. So usually after dress rehearsal, the composer is thinking, oh my God, we've got all these little things we got to tweak. And with this orchestra, usually when you get to game time, everything goes up a notch. So I'm really looking forward to hearing it in a couple hours.
Well, there's so much to congratulate you about. Lately, you're just back from D.C., where you're composer in residence with the National Symphony, had your violin concerto performed by Anna Kiko Myers, Hugh Wolf doing a whole program of your music.
Yeah, you know, there was a really cool kind of alternative program that the National Symphony did. They have this thing called Declassified, which is basically a more of a produced kind of concert. You can imagine the program book becoming sort of video and projections. You can imagine lighting really enhancing the concert. And for me, the most exciting thing was that it was all of my music. I've never had a full orchestral concert and three very different pieces. So to kind of take the audience on that journey was really meaningful for me.
Also, the CD release here on the San Francisco Symphony label, already getting rave reviews. Congratulations on your own CD of music performed by the symphony.
Well, that was really a very meaningful thing for me. You know, as a composer of symphonic music, I'm so fortunate to work with this great, you know, work in this great medium. But because there's so many people involved and it's more complicated than a garage band, it's very difficult to record music. It's expensive. It's not easy to make it happen in live performance. The symphony here has just an incredible track record of recordings, and everything from old to kind of recent, like the Mahler, to contemporary music like John Adams. And to have those three big pieces of mine, Liquid Interface, Alternative Energy, and the B-sides released by Michael and the SFS, was a real milestone for me.
Well, it helps to have such an incredible rapport with Michael Tilson Thomas and the reputation and relationship you've built up with Michael and his support of your work. This, turning to auditorium, this is really a co-commission by not only the San Francisco Symphony, but it's also co-commissioned and dedicated to Larry and Michelle Korash. Tell me about them.
Well, Michelle Korash is a board member here at the Symphony, and she really struck me the first time I met her many years ago at one of these gala-type things where you usually don't have very deep conversations. She was kind of quizzing me about every single new piece and living composer that had come through the Symphony, and I was struck by the depth of her knowledge. Interestingly, her husband Larry is a real kind of Jedi Knight in the world of biosciences, and that's the world that my wife Jamie works in as well. So when we go out to dinner, they speak Greek and talk about science and drug development, and Michelle and I speak about the esoteric world of new music, and they've become great friends and supporters, and this piece is actually commissioned for Larry's birthday.
Very nice. You mentioned on your website that you're emerging from a period of hibernation and that probably self-imposed exile where you need to just isolate yourself. Were you working on some composing, maybe more work on the Steve Jobs opera that's in the works?
That's right. You know, it's great as a composer to have time to work and be completely, you know, focused on composing, because that's the most important thing that you do, obviously. On the other hand, the role of a composer in the music world has kind of changed a bit when you have people like John Adams, who are real you know, maestros out there conducting and organizing concerts. I embrace that him as a role model. I've been curating a lot of concerts at the Kennedy Center, at the Chicago Symphony, with my group Mercury Soul, which has kind of club classical shows. We're doing one on May 20th at the DNA Lounge. And so that kind of stuff keeps me out in the world. But I need to be able to close the door sometimes. The Steve Jobs opera is, I guess it's about two-thirds of the way through, at least the you know, the primary writing part of it. And I'm very, very inspired by the story of his life and how he collided with one of the fundamental issues we face, which is, how do you simplify human communication on these little sleek devices when people are so messy?
Indeed. Well, speaking to that, your ability to just isolate yourself, it must be a tremendous luxury to be at a point where you can say no and be selective and a little bit more picky with your projects.
Well, you know, absolutely. It is a mark of something when you're able to turn something down because you have a lot on your plate. On the other hand, I think that for composers especially, it's important to be able to do that at any level. You know, I'm not a very fast writer, and I spend a lot of time rewriting and throwing away things, and I think that's probably common for quite a number of composers. I think you really can't overproduce as a composer, because it becomes obvious when a piece is not as well thought through, and especially if you're writing symphonically, you have a sort of an interior audience of the orchestra that's playing the piece and seeing it from the inside, and you really want to create something that's going to be memorable for both players and audiences. So in short, I've really tried to not bite off too much, and I think that it always feels like I'm a little bit busier than I need to be. But you know, had I gone forward with every project that came, I would probably be in the loony bin.
Well, some of your works feature you, if not front and center, perhaps tucked away in the percussion department, creating a live electronica riff. Now, with the Mason Bates franchise moving as it is, and holograms not quite being in vogue yet, how do you remove yourself from the performance element? Do you have just a track that's played and instructions? Is it specific to the percussion section, or do you have to get someone specifically in tune with electronica?
It's a little bit like the 5-cent cigar. There's so much work on my end to create a very interesting electronic part that's painted up like a Fabergé egg. When I play it live, I'm kind of like live cooking. However, in order for the pieces to have a real life on their own, I make a kind of Betty Crocker version that can be triggered on a laptop by a percussionist. So nobody needs anything special, no special.
Well, let's go Martha Stewart instead of Betty Crocker.
Well, she went to jail, so that's why I went with the more wholesome. Basically, it was a really interesting process for me to see how you can change an institution like the orchestra. When I first started, you know, it was very unusual for orchestras to have any electronic sounds. And now, you know, 22 years into writing for orchestras, I see that so many of these great regional orchestras have, you know, embraced the idea of using electronic sounds because they might have encountered them in Mothership or in Rusty and Carolina or Alternative Energy. And the key to that happening has been to make it very simple for them to do it. If you can make something that's very rich and layered and intricate and deep that is simple to realize, then that is sort of like the 5-cent cigar that can spread to a lot of different ensembles. And the only way you're going to change a field like the orchestral field is if people can play it.
Maybe we can get a Mason hologram going that can be included part of the kit, Mason Bates composition kit. Now, for my talk last week with Pablo, it's another first time working with Maestro S. Casado, and a first time for a live stream on Facebook, which we're airing this on Thursday. The live airing will have happened last night, meaning Wednesday evening.
Well, you know, it's cool being in the Bay Area where so much energy around tech is happening, and I particularly like the collision of the creative world and technology. Obviously, in this piece, you can see it in a very literal way with electronic remixes of Baroque instruments being played alongside the orchestra. But also on the level of just medium and platform, the digital community is really interesting. A piece that I wrote for Michael Dosen Thomas and the YouTube Symphony called Mothership was the kind of first symphonic piece that had like a live stream, and that was really meaningful for me to have people be able to encounter a piece of music without having to be in the concert hall. Facebook is now taking this to the next level and trying to make it a more of a regular thing, and I really applaud them for doing that. You know, obviously a lot of people use Facebook for catching up with old high school friends or posting videos of cats on skateboards and just sort of the minutiae of everyday life. I think it can continue to be used as a platform for great art, and whether it be hearing Bartok or Shostakovich, Ravel, or a piece of mine, I certainly think that the more we can get the orchestra out into people's daily lives, the better.
Turning back again to the piece that's being premiered, I understand that it was Michael Tilson Thomas that turned you on to some more obscure Baroque composers, and then your work at the faculty of the San Francisco Conservatory and Corey Jameson's Baroque Ensemble. It sounds like a whole new sound world has been opened up to you.
Yeah, I was here at a San Francisco Symphony concert years ago where Michael did this program all about Peter Gynt, which is it's kind of an old story that different composers have brought to life, from Edward Grieg to Alfred Schnittke, completely different composers from different parts of music history. And I loved hearing so many different kinds of music on one concert, responding to the same theme. So I conceived of this piece, Auditorium, specifically as a challenge to me to integrate old music and very new music. In this piece, I use recordings of Baroque instruments and remix them in a kind of ghostly way so that they haunt the orchestra here. So when the San Francisco Symphony goes to tune, you hear this Baroque orchestra come in at a half step off because the tuning has changed over the years. Or you hear them kind of almost do a Ouija board type of call and response across the void where the orchestra will send out a riff in the oboe and then you'll hear the Baroque oboe play it. It is a different sound word for me. I'm always looking for ways to move the needle on the electronic sounds. I started out using naturalistic sounds like earthquakes and water, and I got interested in technological sounds and actually taking sounds of old, almost like sort of quote-unquote extinct instruments seemed a really fruitful way to go artistically.
Well, we need to draw a parallel with the way the rest of the program has been crafted. Ravel's Le Tombeau de Couperin is not necessarily using music of Couperin, but inspired by the 17th century French style that Ravel wanted to have an homage to. I also need to draw a parallel here with composer Béla Bartók, who discovered folk music in his 20s and incorporated folk tunes that he discovered into his works. But like this auditorium, and like Bartók's dance suite that's on this program, it's his original music that is being used, not music that's from the past or taken from someone else.
Yeah, there's a huge amount of music that has responded to very old music. And you look at the pieces in this program, the Ravel, the Bartók, or, you know, the Stravinsky Dumbarton Oaks or the Rake's Progress. I wanted to kind of turn this idea on its head a little bit by not only referencing the mannerisms and musical style of the Baroque era, but actually using the instruments. You know, these instruments, like, let's say, the harpsichord, are much more kind of vulnerable than the instruments we have today, which you can think of as like thoroughbreds, powerhouses of engineering. You think of the harpsichord versus the piano. Piano is made of steel, has huge projection capabilities. Harpsichord is very delicate. That's exactly the way it is for almost all the instruments. You know, whether it be the Baroque oboe, which can, you know, every note is a kind of discovery because of the way you have to make it speak, or the string section of the Baroque era had, gut strings, which projected differently than what we have now. That appealed to me as a way of kind of taking this old through a new lens and giving it a little bit of a new breath of air.
More than once, you use the word vulnerability in terms of these instruments.
That was Corey's idea, Corey Jameson at the conservatory. I was asking him, what is the essence of these instruments? I think a lot of times if we think of period instruments, you might think of these kind of pure major chords, purity. The thing is, Corey said it's deeper than that. You know, these instruments have a kind of almost earthy, vulnerable sound because they can't speak quite as loud as the instruments we're used to. Also, Michael had put me onto some very virtuosic, almost like bluegrass string band level Baroque music by Uccellini and Farina, pretty obscure for a mainstream listener. That too appears in the piece, these kind of ecstatic, scratchy sounds of Baroque instruments. So I was trying to really get at the essence of the music of that period and also the instruments of that period.
It's almost a continuation of your idea of using found sound, whether it's junkyard parts or a recording of a NASA astronaut or an electrical power plant, but reimagined.
That's right. The electronic element in my music has really transformed over the years. I came at it from electronic dance music, techno. The kind of pops, clicks, and glitches of that world were very appealing to me. Very quickly, though, I realized that, once you have speakers on stage, you can go places. You can go to the deep south, as I do in Rusty Air in Carolina, or you can go to the outer edge of the atmosphere, like in the B-sides, where I use a NASA recording of a spacewalk. So to me, this element of content that you can bring into the electronics is really as rich in a way as the idea of bringing in text. You think of I look at the Beethoven 9 as such an ostentatious and beautiful statement, because here he brought in a whole chorus and they're singing about something. And in a way, I do think that having electronic sounds is a way to bring content almost like text into the hall. And so whether it be these sounds that put you in a space or a place, or actually take you inside an instrument, I think that's a rich world worth exploring.
Well, I mentioned earlier the Steve Jobs opera that you're working on. I see on your calendar that May 1st you're back here with the San Francisco Symphony Chorus for mass transmissions. And then New York City Ballet is doing Mothership.
That's right. You know, that's an example of Mothership happening as it, you know, usually does without me. They're playing it. It's a big honor for me to have the City Ballet do a piece of music. I, you know, went to school at Juilliard and would see City Ballet a lot. My wife Jamie danced at Pacific Northwest Ballet, and City Ballet was always the kind of mecca that you would go to. So we're actually going to go out and hear the piece. I also would note that there's another local event here that's quite different from the symphonic experience. May 20th at the Club DNA Lounge, we're doing Mercury Soul, which is a kind of classical music in a club setting. And we've had a good following of people here from all walks check out this event, whether it happened at Mezzanine or Ruby Sky. And now we're bringing it to the DNA Lounge on Friday, May 20th.
Well, we'll look forward to the next dispatch from the Mason Bates Juggernaut. Thanks again for taking time right after this rehearsal, and I'm sure it's going to be a big hit.
Great. Thank you, David.
Let's just take a little moment to hear some of that rehearsal of Mason Bates Auditorium from yesterday's rehearsal with the San Francisco Symphony. Just a taste of Auditorium, Mason Bates world premiere, which happened last night, and for the first time ever, a world premiere that was done live on Facebook as well. Information about the concerts remaining tomorrow night and Saturday under Pablo Eras Casado, Mason Bates Auditorium, sfsymphony.org, and a reminder that program also includes the Le Tombeau du Couperin by Ravel and Bartok's Dance Suite. Appropriate for our next segment on dance and talk with Celia Fuchiel. Also still to come, we'll be hearing about some summer Shakespeare, enabling you to brush up your Shakespeare as the summer months approach. Well, Smuin Ballet concludes its 22nd season with Dance Series 2, featuring Oasis, a world premiere by acclaimed choreographer Helen Pickett, set to music by House of Cards composer Jeff Beal. Here to talk about that work and the rest of the concluding 22nd season of Smuin is Celia Fuchiel. She's been artistic director since 2007 of the company. She's been leading the artistic vision of the company and increasing its reputation to make it really San Francisco's premier contemporary American ballet company. Before that, she was Smuin's first dancer and appeared on stages in both the U.S. and Europe, on television and in film. And as artistic director, she has expanded the repertoire of the company by commissioning some 13 premieres and adding the work of renowned choreographers while keeping Michael Smuin's legacy. From 2008 to 2014, she also served as executive director of the company. For all things Smuin, now we turn to Celia Fuchiel, and welcome once again to Open Air.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So wonderful to have you on Dance Week. Earlier this week, our morning host For your call, Rose Aguilar had a full program about all the amazing dance things happening this week. And coming soon, now not necessarily this week, is Smiyun's Dance Series 2. Let's talk about that.
Right. Hope everyone gets out to enjoy some dance.
Indeed.
It was probably about 2 years ago when I approached Helen Pickett. We had had a fabulous ballet of hers a few years ago called Petal. And I wanted to commission a new work. And so she pitched this idea to me. She had recently been introduced to Jeff Beal, who had composed the music for a documentary called Last Call at the Oasis. And so this documentary, which was about water and its shortage and our need for this resource, it was rather timely, was the inspiration, although this is more a celebration and an ode to water. And the score that Jeff Beal created for us uses some of the melodies derived from the documentary, but probably about 17 or 18 minutes of the score, it's about a 24, 26-minute ballet, are original for us. And it's been thrilling to work with Jeff. He some of his scores of the films he's done, like for Pollock, for example, people said, it's so lyrical, people should be dancing to this. And so he contacted his publisher, and he said, put me in touch with some choreographers I'd really like to create for dance. So a match was made with Helen, and we are the recipient of this fabulous connection.
That's
so
fantastic.
It's been exciting.
Yeah. Well, we'll come back to Jeff Beal's music shortly, but tell us about what else is on this program.
We'll open
While we're on that, who's dancing in that work?
It's a full company work.
Okay.
So two of the pieces on the program are full company works, opening with Val Canaparoli's Tutto Aceto e Lavandino.
You need to tell us what that translation is. I love it.
It is great, and it was a little tongue-in-cheek, and he said, this ballet has everything but the kitchen sink in it. So he said, I think that's what I'll call it.
Tutto Aceto e Lavandino.
But exactly. But to go with the Vivaldi and a little Italian, throw a little Italian in there. He contacted some of the language teachers at ACT and said, how would I say that in Italian? So that became the title of the ballet.
Nice. You say full company works. What does that mean for Smiyun?
We are 16 dancers, 8 men and 8 women. And Val, it's fabulous because as a local choreographer, he gets to see these dancers performing throughout the year. And so he really puts a lot of their own personalities into the choreography. Whereas somebody who's just coming for 2 or 3 weeks to create a new work, doesn't know the company, and they just watch company class and see how people move, and they just start from scratch, and they don't really have the chance to build that relationship. So it's been lovely working with Val over the years because he does have that opportunity to see the company and capitalize on those relationships. And part of what makes Smiyun unique is that because we are a small company, our audience becomes so familiar with the dancers and they become connected to them. And there is that individual connection. The dancers come out in the lobby and meet the audience. And over the years, the audience feels that they really know these dancers. And it's even more so with Val because he also brings that out on the stage.
What's also unique and what I love about Smiyun is you're not just building your audience here in San Francisco. You're building it at the Lesher Center in Walnut Creek, and you're building it in San Mateo at the San Mateo Performing Arts Center.
So yes.
Three different audiences that you're cultivating. It's
exactly.
Wonderful.
We'll be there the first weekend of June, so first time in San Mateo. Hope everyone will join us there.
Mm-hmm. The Smiyun Ballet's Dance Series 2, the 6th through the 15th of May here in San Francisco at the Yerba Buena Center, Walnut Creek, May 27th and 28th at the Lesher Center, and then in June for the first time at the Center. It's a beautiful space, by the way, the San Mateo Performing Arts Center.
It is spectacular.
Peninsula Symphony plays down there, and I play with them, and it's a very, very nice space.
It's terrific.
So tell me about what one would see with this very spirited Tutto Aceto e Lavandino, everything but the kitchen sink. So is he throwing in all kinds of moves that way, or what's
he does. I mean, certainly everything is classically based. Everything we do is classically based, but then he has challenged the dancers in some very quirky hand movements and head gestures, different moments where the ladies fall on the floor and then the guy suddenly, out of nowhere, like a jack-in-the-box, springing over the ladies to the other side. He has some beautiful pas de deux, so it really runs the gamut of slow and sensitive pas de deux. There's even a male duet in there, several fantastic group sections, a women's section, a men's section. So it's he really mixes it up, and he has a little bit of it. Some of it's serious, some of it's fun.
Well, speaking of the mixing up of the dancing, one thing that I've really come to enjoy about the Smyon is it's visually spectacular, too. What are we going to be seeing on stage in terms of costuming or background?
Thank you. Well, the highlight certainly is going to be Oasis. To see, in terms of the production, we have a spectacular set. Helen has collaborated with two Australian designers. Nick Raymond is our lighting designer, and Emma Kingsbury is doing the scenic elements as well as the costuming, and it's going to be lavish. There are these gigantic curtains that are made of threads, and they're scalloped, and it feels like you're underwater. And there's going to be projections on them, so it's going to be a fabulous, visually stunning piece. And then added to that is Jeff Beal's spectacular score, which is so cinematic. When we get into the Yerba Buena Theater with that awesome sound system, it's going to be exciting to see that, to hear that, and have the full experience. So we're looking forward to having it all come together next week.
Well, let's hear a little bit more of that Jeff Beal score original for Oasis. Before I thank you once again, I mean, a lot of what's happening at Smyon is thanks to your leadership and your inspiration, and I'm sure that's coming through in the dancers as well. Thanks for coming in, Celia.
Thank you, David. Bye-bye.
Celia Fuchsiel is Artistic Director of Smyon Ballet. More information about their 22nd season concluding here in San Francisco in Walnut Creek and San Mateo is at their website, smuinballet.org, smuinballet.org. Brushing up Shakespeare on the way, but here's some music of Jeff Beal created original music for Oasis, a world premiere by acclaimed choreographer Helen Pickett. Definitely hear a bit of House of Cards going on there. Jeff Beal's original score for Oasis, a world premiere by choreographer Helen Pickett, part of the Smyon Ballet's Dance Series 2, concluding their 22nd season. Again, more information at smyonballet.org.
Brush up your Shakespeare. Start quoting him now. Brush up your Shakespeare and the women you will bow.
Just declaim a few lines from Othello, and she'll think you're a hell of a fella.
If your blonde won't respond when you flatter her, tell her what Tony told Cleopatra.
If she fights when her clothes you are mussing,
what a clothes much ado about nothing. Brush up your Shakespeare, and they'll all kowtow. Brush up your Shakespeare, start quoting him now. Brush up your Shakespeare, and the women you will wow.
Never gets old, brush up your Shakespeare. Here's Peter Robinson to update us on some summer Shakespeare happenings. Welcome back, Peter.
Hi, David. Good to be here. And it's also the celebration of 400 years of the Bard's death. He died in 1616. And we're not absolutely sure when he was born, but one question I'm frequently asked when I introduce a Shakespearean play at some of the different theatres is why or how does he remain so popular 400 years later? And I think my quick answer to this is that he deals with love and hate, he deals with hope and fears, he deals with the eternal internal conflicts with which we are all contend, often on a daily basis. And he brings all these different thoughts about people's feelings and puts them in the big picture. He is part of that human element of everyday life where you can find ambition, you can find tragedy, you can find history, you can find philosophy. And if you look at any of the plays, like Greed and Murder is the theme of Macbeth. If you take Prejudice, we have it both in The Merchant of Venice and also in Othello. And if you're looking for leadership and loyalty, of course, there's Richard III and indeed Henry V. And if you're looking for the philosophy, fate versus free will, then you have Hamlet. So what Shakespeare does to me, he does it today, he did it then, he continues in all these different productions which I'll be speaking about, is put in a beautiful package laced with verse, rhyming couplets, seasons with puns and word games, everything resounding and reverberating the firework that displays meaning, wit, and wisdom. And I think that's the very quick answer as to why we still go to the theatre to watch him. Now, around the Bay Area, starting in next month, starting in June, at Santa Cruz Shakespeare, which is now moved away from the Redwood Glen into the park, you can catch up with Midsummer Night's Dream and also with Hamlet. Over in Vallejo, you can get three different outings for Shakespeare, one in the Hanna Park, the other down there at Martinez on the waterfront, and then in the historical park just outside Oakland, the Taming of the Shrew. And again, that takes me back, of course, to Cole Porter and Kiss Me, Kate. The immortal line comes from that. In the North Bay, at the Meadows down there next to Dominican University, we have Marin Shakespeare Company, and they too are offering three plays. They're offering The Shrew, they're offering Twelfth Night, and they are offering Othello. And that's also a great place for a picnic, so you can come as a family. They do actually have family days. That's Marin Shakespeare Company on the Forest Meadows out at Dominican University. Across the bay in California Shakespeare in Arinda, and you can get there quite easily. The tube does take you out, and they have a shuttle bus to take you up to the theatre. There is Much Ado About Nothing and Othello. And one tip I always offer if you're going to Cal Shakes is do arrive about an hour early, because the dramaturge, Philippa Kelly, gives an interesting introduction to the background on the play. It tells you about how the production is going to unfold. And then quite often after the show, they do have an exchange, a discussion with the actors. So that's at Cal Shakes. Again, Much Ado About Nothing and Othello. And down in Silicon Valley, again, there's Free Shakespeare in the Park. And this time they're offering both Love's Labour's Lost and Julius Caesar. So there are many different chances in many different places outdoors to enjoy Shakespeare just in the Bay Area alone. At a later broadcast, I'll be talking about Ashland and Oregon, which of course has got a full festival. But let me finish and move over to Livermore Shakespeare Festival, which is actually held in the Vent Vineyards Estate, so you can have a tasting of wine before the play. And they are doing the Tempest, and that to me is almost the most appropriate play, given that it's Shakespeare's birthday. It's the story about Prospero, who is a duke who's shipwrecked on a desert island, and in the course of the play, he conjures up different images. And I feel that that closing speech of Prospero is not only about the Tempest itself, not only about the cast and the characters. But because it is one of Shakespeare's last plays, written only shortly before his death, I feel that he is speaking both to himself and to a wider audience. And as Prospero looks towards his daughter Miranda, he begins, "Our revels now are ended. These are actors, as I foretold you, were all spirits, and are melted into thin air. And like the baseless fabric of this vision, the cloud-capped towers, the gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself, yes, all which it inherit shall dissolve. And like this insubstantial pageant faded, leave not a rack behind. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep." And there I think we have it. That is an address to actors, the stuff that dreams are made on, the imagination brought to life on the stage, and that sense that we're leaving something behind. And he even works into that six or eight lines, the great globe itself, which of course now has been restored down there in London, circular outdoor stage, a great place if you're travelling over to England to experience a Shakespeare play. So what can I say? I can say happy birthday to the bard. This indeed is the stuff that dreams are made on. And we have plenty of choices if you're looking for outdoor Shakespeare in the park, having a picnic and enjoying a performance.
Well, after that reading period, Peter, I'm wondering when you had some experience with Shakespeare.
Well, to be or not to be, or TV or not TV, that really is what it comes down to. So I've been mainly involved in the satirical side of Shakespeare in the Footlights at Cambridge. And while we respected the bard, we also looked for those other lines, not unlike the way I think the Cole Porter does in Brush Up Your Shakespeare.
Very nice. Thank you, Peter. Always a pleasure talking with you. And as always, there's some wonderful Shakespeare here throughout the Bay Area. We'll link to some of those things at our website, klw.org, search for Open Air. And we'll have you on again soon, Peter. Concluding today's show, I thought I'd give a little birthday tribute, thanks to my producer, Niels Swinkels, for bringing it to my attention. Blossom Dearie was born on this date in 1924. She passed away in 2009, but it's a nice little birthday tribute we thought would share a couple of tunes of the inimitable Blossom Dearie's voice.
I have eyes for you to give you dirty looks. I have words that do not come from children's books. There's a trick with a knife I'm learning to do. But everything I've got belongs to you. I've a powerful anesthesia in my fist, and the perfect wrist to give your neck a twist. Hammerlock holes, I've mastered a few. But everything I've got belongs to you. Share for share alike. You get struck each time I strike. Me for you, you for me. I'll give you plenty of nothing. I'm not yours for better, but for worse. And I've learned to give the well-known witch's curse. I've a terrible tongue and a temper for two. But everything I've got belongs to you. Sleep and sleep, sleep and sleep and sleep and sleep, sleep and sleep, sleep and sleep. I'll give you plenty of nothing. I'm not yours for better, but for worse. And I've learned to give the well-known witch's curse. I've a terrible tongue and a temper for two. But everything I've got. Ooh, it's not a lot, but everything I've got belongs to you. To be hip, I was hip. I don't blow, but I'm a fan. Look at me swing, ring-a-ding-ding. I even call my girlfriend, man, I'm so hip. Every Saturday night, with my suit buttoned tight and my suede's on, I'm getting my kicks, watching arty French flicks with my shades on. I'm too much, I'm a gas. I am anything but middle class. When I hang around the band, popping my thumbs, digging the drums, squares don't seem to understand why I flip. They're not hip like I'm hip. I'm hip, I'm alive. I enjoy any joint where there's jive. I'm on top of every trend. Look at me go, vo-de-o-do. Bobby Darin knows my friend. I'm so hip. I'm hip, but not weird. Like you notice, I don't wear a beard. Beards were in, but now they're out. They had their day, now they're passé. Just ask me if you're in doubt, 'cause I'm hip. Now whatever the fads, and whatever the ads say, it's Neatsville. I'll be keeping abreast, out in front of the rest with Elitesville. 'Cause I'm cool as a cuke. I'm a cat, I'm a card, I'm a kook. I get so much out of life. Really I do, scuba-doo-boo. One more time, play Mac the Knife. Let her rip, I may flip, but I'm hip.
Happy birthday, Blossom Dearie, born this date in 1924. I'm David LaTulipe. You've been listening to Open Air here on KALW. A reminder that our shows are archived at our website, kalw.org. You can send me a program segment suggestion by email, david@kalw.org. Thanks to Neil Swinkles for calendaring and producing Open Air. Again, our shows are archived at klw.org. And a reminder to do please join me this coming Monday evening, and for every Monday evening at 9 throughout the month of May, we begin our broadcasts of the complete 2015-16 Berklee Symphony season. And that concert will start, series will start on Monday night with Ravel's Bolero, Kaija Saariaho's Laterna Magica, and all other works on the program, Monday night at 9. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week, same time.